This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed, 1 hour of old-time radio crime brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. Thanks for joining me this week. We'll hear first from Unit 99. We'll hear Threatening Letter, their episode from October 25th, 1957. After that, it's Jeff Regan, Investigator, and his story from October 18th, 1950, titled A Streetcar Named Schultz.
Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air. This is Sergeant Dan Meredith of Unit 99 at Headquarters, Police Department, City of Sacramento, California. My detail is to ride in Unit 99, our tape recorder-equipped radio car, and to respond whenever the dispatcher transmits a signal to one of our other units on duty somewhere in the city. At the scene, we make the recordings for this program. Now, to tell you more about Unit 99, here is our chief, James V. Hicks, Sacramento Police.
We have provided Unit 99 of the Sacramento Police Department the tape recorder it carries and the officer in charge, Sergeant Meredith, so that you, who depend on your police for protection, can hear them in action, on duty. And what you hear on this radio program is real. No question about it. The suspects are real. The victims are real. Bear this in mind as you hear these cases. Now to Unit 99 and Sergeant Dan Meredith, on duty.
Unit 99.
99, go ahead.
924 Detective 99.
924, coming in.
KMA 907.
The Detective Bureau is down here at the end of the hall. Let's go in.
Hi, Dan. What's doing?
Hi, Sasuke. I just got a 924 to come up here to the Detective Bureau. Understand you and Mahanovich might have something. What is it?
Yeah, I think it was on the 4th, Saturday, or the 5th of April, we received a call from the victim stating to the effect that she had received a threatening letter.
You have that letter that was written?
Yeah. The letter states, "Have you got fire insurance? I asked one of the kitchen help for a sandwich, and he ignored me. That little item will cost you $315 in 5s and 10s. A little kerosene or gasoline spread around the back door with paper and soaked rags should demolish that little lunchroom. Of course, you can avoid all this needless loss and confusion by getting this money and putting it in a small paper bag, and simply place the bag with the money in it on the floor of the public phone booth, adjacent to your place of business. I will look for it at 8 a.m. If it isn't there before or after 8, that will mean fire and disaster. If you aren't foolish, you will complete this transaction, let's say Tuesday, April 9, 1957.
After receiving this letter and talking with the victim, what did you proceed to do?
Well, we proceeded to get some money. Matter of fact, Steve, or not money, but paper. Steve cut up some newspaper.
Your partner?
Yeah, my partner. And he placed it in a paper bag, and then he took it out to the victim and gave her instructions as to comply with the stipulations of this letter. And about 7:45 this morning, we were, my partner and I, Steve, were parked under the municipal parking lot, which is just north of this business establishment. And we observed this gentleman initially on the corner of 10th and I Street. And then he started going east and toward the Pantry Restaurant. And as he got right close to the telephone booth, he took a long look into the interior of the phone booth, and about that time I was ready to jump out of the car. And Steve says, "Hey, wait a minute." He says, "Take it easy." He says, "He hasn't gone in there yet." And about the time he said that, the fellow proceeded to go east on I Street, And we observed him until he got to 11th and I, and he made a right turn on 11th and went south and out of our sight. And then on about 5 minutes, 5 or 10 minutes expired, and Steve says, say, that same fellow there, you were ready to jump out of the car a short time ago, is back there on the corner. And sure enough, he came up slowly, and about the time he got to the telephone booth again, why, he opened the door suddenly and snatched the paper bag, and he started walking in a normal fashion, I would say. Wouldn't you, Steve?
Yes, it wasn't too rapid, no.
Yeah, he started walking in a southwesterly direction through the Standard Station parking lot that's directly on the corner there of 10th and I Street. And in the meantime, he put the paper bag in his left side pocket of his jacket. And then about that time, we were out to the car and up on him, and he looked around and says, what was that comment he made, Steve?
Where'd you guys come from? The first comment he made.
Yeah. Did he offer any resistance?
No, he didn't at all. He was very cooperative up to this point. We intend to take and interrogate him as to some of the aspects of this. And
where is he now?
He's on the third floor. We're just in the process of booking him for extortion. Sir, do you understand in connection with this matter your constitutional rights?
Oh, yes.
Now, in connection with this extortion letter, could you tell us about the time that you wrote this letter, or about the first time this thought entered your mind in obtaining some money from these people through this manner?
Well, I'd say about Wednesday or Thursday. I asked this fellow for a sandwich, and he turned me down. He didn't turn me down. He just ignored me. Why, I got burned up about it.
Were you actually going to carry this threat through?
No, of course not. I mean, too much. Tell you one thing, there's gas stations all around there. No, I'd never think of doing it.
You ever in the past done this sort of a thing before?
Well, no, I've written about it, but I never did it, what you call an accomplished fact. I tried to extort money twice already.
Well, did you get anything on these previous occasions?
No, sir.
Well, how many times was that? Was it one time previous to this, or two times, or could you explain a little bit, go in detail?
Yeah, of course. One time I was up in Portland, Oregon. I tried to get $500, and I got locked up. I got 1 year out of that. And then in Frisco, I got trying to get $5,000. I was a federal beef, and I got 2 years.
When you put the bag in your pocket, did you think that your act was successful?
I certainly did. You fellas appeared there.
Were you concerned about whether or not the party that you wrote the letter to, whether or not they would notify the police?
Well, of course, but that's just something you got to take, you know. But I looked all around. I didn't see anybody, so I figured I was nothing to it. Matter of fact, when I walked through that Standard Station, I thought I was in.
You know, it seems kind of strange to me as to why you would pick the telephone booth to have the person place the money in.
Well, I'll tell you, that's quite simple. I figured that the hour was 8 o'clock, and I figured there wouldn't be nobody messing around calling up. And I'd passed that phone booth, that particular place, quite a number of times. It was always vacant. Matter of fact, I'd tried to tap the slot a few times. There was a stray dime in there, and there was nothing in there.
Now, in connection with this extortion, it seems to me as though you had an occasion to attempt it three times. And on each occasion, you haven't succeeded. Do you think you're going to change your avocation this time, or are you going to discontinue crime entirely?
Well, I don't know about discontinuing crime, because it's hard to get a job, and I'm definitely going to quit the extortion.
The apprehension of this extortionist was not what you would call a difficult or puzzling case. The man was a bungling criminal with a record of failure in two previous extortion attempts. His latest arrest, if nothing else, persuaded him that he was in the wrong line. And while he is not convinced that crime does not pay, he, very definitely, is giving up extortion.
Unit 4. 211 at 12th Avenue and Franklin Boulevard, service station. No details yet.
Unit 4, 12th Avenue, Franklin Boulevard.
Just
sent a stick up from Franklin Boulevard. Unit 4 has been dispatched on the call. We'll cover it.
KMA 907 to Unit 4. Further information on 211 at 12th and Franklin. Suspect was last seen going east on 12th Avenue towards Stockton Boulevard, driving a 1950 Studebaker sedan, tan in color. He was MWA with thick curly red hair, a tan overcoat. He's about 30. 5'8", weighs about 150 pounds. He was wearing horn-rimmed glasses.
We're at the station now, and there's a correction on that. He is heading north on 33rd Street at Oak Park.
Check 4. KMA 907 to all units. Information on 211 at 12th and Franklin. Culprit was last seen going north on 33rd Street to Oak Park.
Hi, Coyote, what do you got?
This is a stick-up, and these two people here witnessed the, they seen the man leave the station just after it happened. You want to tell me just what happened?
Well, as we were approaching the intersection here at 12th Avenue and Franklin Boulevard, we spotted this man running out of the service station to his car over here. That was, the door on the driver's side was open and the lights were on. Attracted our attention to him. And he took off down 12th Avenue right behind our car and passed us at such a high rate of speed and down 33rd towards Oak Park that it made us suspicious. We turned around and came back to see if the service station attendant was all right.
Do you think you'd be able to recognize this man again if you ever seen him?
Yes, I think so.
Officer Coyote and Reynolds are questioning the service station operator in regard to what happened.
Okay, you want to tell us just what happened now from the moment the man walked in until he left? Just relate it as it happened.
Well, I was just closing up, and Tan Studebaker pulled up on the
island.
On 12th Avenue Island, and it pulled ahead of the island a little bit, and I couldn't see it from inside. I walked out the door, and there was a man with a lot of curly red hair and a tan overcoat standing there, and he, as I walked out, he was lifting his collar and tucking it in front. I had an idea there might be something the matter when I first walked out. And then he, as I walked up to him, he says, give me all the receipts. I said, what'd you say? He says, give me all the receipts for the day. He says, just walk ahead of me and walk inside the building. So I walked to the side door, and I'd already locked it. And he says, well, then walk around the front. So I walked around in front.
Pardon me, was that his exact words? Give me the receipts?
Yes.
Did he say anything about this as a stick-up or anything to indicate? Just give
no,
me the
he
receipts.
He just put his hand in his pocket and simulated a gun.
What did he say when he put his hand in his pocket? Did he say anything?
He didn't say anything. He just simulated a gun like this and said, all right, now give me all the day's receipts. And he says, don't turn around.
That was
just keep looking
that's
forward.
Exactly what he said. That's his exact words.
Yeah.
Fine. Now what happened?
And so I walked inside, and he says, now just act as if you were going to give change. And I opened it up, and he says, all right, now just lay out all the currency out there on the till. And I laid out about half of it, and then he gave me a $5 bill. And all crumpled up, he just pulled it out of his pocket, and he straightened it out, and he says, here, now put this in the till. So I put it in the till, and he says, now take it out, as if you were giving me change. So I did that, and then I said, you want the coin? He says, no. And he says, where's your telephone? And I said, well, there's a booth right out there. He says, well, don't try to go out and make a call. And I said, don't worry, I won't, because I don't have a dime. And then as he ran for the car, I ran around the side and came in here and used this phone. And then he took off.
Do you think you could recognize a man if you seen him again?
Oh, yes.
You're sure?
Definitely.
Positively identified.
Oh, yes.
Okay. That's about it.
Unit 4, units 268-284. 940 at 35th and 4th Avenue. Regarding the 211 at 12th and Franklin, the meat man has a suspect under surveillance. The car is parked in the rear of Steen's at this time.
Check unit 4. We'll approach from the 4th Avenue side. Will you advise us where the detectives will be?
There's a suspect they believe is in the Oak Park area. Terry, the officer on the beat, has a man under surveillance who's asked for the cars to meet him at 4th Avenue and 35th Street. Unit 4 has come in from the back of the bar. One of the officers is running around the back. Two of the officers are standing in front. Let's get out and see what it is. Car is believed parked in the back of the bar on 4th Avenue, Oak Park. The detective's office, yeah. Detective Oakes, has a man in custody. He's bringing him out of the bar onto the street, taking him around and back of the establishment.
Look right here. Look right here. Right here. I had some trouble with my wife tonight, and that's why I got all the clothes in my car. I was just talking to a friend in there.
How long have you been in there?
Well, I don't know.
Were you ever arrested before?
Yes.
For what?
For forgery. Mm-hmm. That's all?
Where have you been tonight?
I was out the house, and I come down here, and that's all. In fact, I was just getting ready to play you. In there, can I put this in my hand pocket?
Certainly.
You shaking him down, Oaks?
Yeah, I have.
Well, he didn't shake me down, Oaks. You know me.
I know you. Yes, I do. Where'd you get all this dough?
I had a check the other day for $170. I got one today for
where did you get
$35.
This
dough? I've had it all in the evening. What's this?
Officer Oaks.
What kind of deal is this?
Detective Oaks has found a large wad of currency in the suspect's pocket.
Well, what kind of shakeout? What, I don't know.
You're under arrest for armed robbery. What do you think of that?
If I am, I'm under arrest.
All right.
But I don't. I never did nothing.
Well, if you didn't do anything, then you got nothing to worry about, have you?
That's right.
All right. Put them on.
I don't know what's happening here.
You know what's the matter.
No, I do
not. Officer Oaks just told you what the trouble was.
Well, he says I'm under arrest for armed robbery.
Correct.
I don't understand.
What do you mean you don't understand? Where'd you just come from? This your car here?
Yes, this is my car.
Where did you just come from?
I just come from Stockton Boulevard.
Where on Stockton?
I come off of Wallace. I was right up at, right off of, I was on my own street.
We're going to take him in, Sergeant. And we'll bring the victim and the witnesses in. We have an identification here on the spot.
He has been identified?
Huh? On the spot, yeah.
Good. We'll meet you in the station. Officer Carey, I understand you spotted the suspect in his car. Is that right?
Hey, I see he was coming down 33rd. He turned right on 4th Avenue, and I saw him park in the parking lot behind Steen's. And I didn't at the time. I didn't know nothing of the 211. And I walked, continued on my beat, and a squad car stopped me and told me that a tan Studebaker had been used in a stick-up. And then I remembered seeing, I came down here and called in the station and told them to get registrations on the car and to send help out.
Did you know where the suspect was at that time?
I went into the bar, and I asked the bartender if anybody had came in, and he said just the guy in the red shirt with the glasses. So then I took off and called the station and told them about it. And they sent the other officers out here.
That's fine. That was a good piece of work. We're in the detective bureau. They're preparing to have a lineup on this stick-up man. We have two witnesses, and the victim. They've brought four men down from the jail who answer the description of the suspect. And they're going to put them in a cell that we have on the second floor here. Then they'll have the victim and the two witnesses try to identify. The suspect has been placed in the cell. They're bringing the victim out. He's going in now and see if he can identify the man.
We got a window here. People look through and they can't see you.
It's an one-way glass.
I don't want anybody to face him where I talk or anything when I speak up.
That's him.
Which one now?
The one with the red shirt.
The one with the red shirt? What order in line is he?
He's the third one from the end.
Third one from the left?
Yeah.
Okay.
Third one from the left as we face them.
Yeah.
Got okay. The bushy hair.
The victim has just made a positive identification of the suspect. Has identified him as the third man in the line from the left. Bring one of the witnesses in and have him look at the lineup.
See anybody you recognize? Want to speak up and you tell me what order in line or anything?
Yeah, this boy in the one here in the red.
The red shirt.
Yeah.
What number?
Maybe
on the left.
Would he be the third from the left? That's that's the guy.
No question in your mind at all.
My wife's description. That's in the certification, man. That's the guy. All right. That's the one that she identified at the back of the Steen's corner. There, no far. Yeah, that's the one.
Now the third witness is approaching the window.
It's the third gentleman right before me here.
How's he dressed?
The red shirt. He has horn rimmed glasses.
Okay. How's it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Detective Rellis has just finished the lineup. You want to tell us what happened?
Well, the usual procedure, we bring four or five persons down with them, place them in a lineup. Persons of similar height and description. We placed them all in the lineup, and the victims who came in one at a time to look at them picked a culprit out. Each one picked the same culprit, so apparently he's responsible for our robbery over there at 12th Avenue Franklin Boulevard.
The arrest of this holdup suspect resulted from alertness by both citizens and police. The description of the getaway car led directly to the arrest. Although this man was picked out of a lineup by two witnesses and the holdup victim, he continues to deny his guilt and is awaiting trial for armed robbery.
This is Unit 99, presented in cooperation with Station KFBK in Sacramento, California. These on-the-scene tape recordings were provided by the Sacramento Police Department and were made on duty by Sergeant Dan Meredith in Unit 99. Your host is Chief James V. Hicks of the Sacramento Police Department.
KMA 907, Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air.
Unit 99 has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
My name's Regan. I work for Anthony J. Lyon, Detective Bureau. They call me the Lion's Eye.
CBS brings you Jeff Regan, Investigator, starring Frank Graham as Regan with Frank Nelson as Anthony J. Lyon. So stand by for mystery and suspense and adventure in tonight's story, A Streetcar Named Schultz.
We'll be right back. It was 2 out of 3 falls, 1 hour time limit. Me and a bunch of muscle-bound wrestlers and a scared blonde. You didn't have to be an expert to know the difference between a broken toenail and a stranglehold. It began in the office of my boss, Anthony J. Lyon. He called me in to meet a new client. Young guy, handsome, muscular, about 27 or 8, dressed in a... I did a take. He was dressed in a black cutaway coat, striped trousers, gray vest, and silk ascot. Without a program, you couldn't tell it from a wedding or a funeral.
Jeffrey, come in. I want you to meet our new client, the Earl of Gardner.
Hiya.
How'd you do? Jeffrey, our client, the Earl, has quite a problem.
Oh. Jilted at the church?
No, of course not. This is serious, Jeffrey, very serious. The Earl is a famous wrestler. Surely you've heard of him.
No television set.
Yes. Well, perhaps I'll let the Earl tell you his own story.
Well, I think that would be advisable, gentlemen.
Okay by me. Start from the top.
Well, last evening, Mr. Regan, I was engaged in a match with a chap who called himself the Atomic Assassin. It was 2 out of 3 falls, 1 hour time limit. Naturally, I won.
Naturally?
Shortly after the completion of the match, the Atomic Assassin suffered a stomach disorder. I'm not certain of the technical name for it.
Well, we can skip that.
The Atomic Assassin is no longer with us.
He retired?
He's dead.
It was in the papers.
The police have discovered poison in a post-mortem completed only a few hours ago. They suspected me of murder.
That part wasn't in the papers.
Oh, we must help our client, Jeffrey. He's given us a retainer of $100. You understand, Jeffrey, our client is innocent.
Oh, sure.
Yes, go on.
Well, the police are annoying me with their insinuations. The State Athletic Commission is being downright rude. I will not put up with this any longer. Do I make myself clear?
We find out who killed the Atomic Assassin and you sidestep a murder rap.
Precisely.
What do you know about the other guy, the assassinated Adam?
Nothing.
Well, that's no help.
Well, he's a crude fellow, ill-mannered. Dubious family background.
Look, you want a murder solved or a family history?
Just a moment, sir.
Jeffrey, our client...
Drop the vaudeville, Earl. Murder isn't show business. Give me some facts, and fast.
Okay, I tell you, I don't know anything about it.
Well, that's better. At least I don't have to cut the accent with a knife.
$100 is a lot of money to me, Regan. I want answers, and I want them now. I don't like the smell of gas.
Well, that's normal.
Jeffrey, you are going to help the Earl.
Yeah, I'll help him. Just one thing, Fatso.
Yes, Jeffrey?
He's the wrestler. He takes the falls. All I got out of the Earl was that he trained at Mike Turner's gym downtown. Mike was also the guy who promoted the fatal match, so I headed there. 20 minutes later, I'd pushed my way through jammed-up L.A. traffic and walked up 2 flights of stairs to Turner's gymnasium. It was packed with big muscles and cauliflower ears, the smell of liniment and the smell of sweat-stained leather. Somewhere behind the massive biceps, a little man came toward me. He was mopping his brow, trying to shake off the heat of the clammy room.
Hiya, want to work out?
Looking for Mike.
For why?
For reasons.
Whose reasons?
My reasons.
Okay, so I'm Mike.
The name's Regan. Lion Detective Bureau.
The lines are, yeah.
You promoted the match last night?
What match?
The Earl of Gardner versus the Atomic Assassin.
Oh, that match.
What can you give me on it?
What did I get? Trouble. Please, Regan, let a guy live and forget, huh?
What about the assassin?
Truck driver. I picked him up. Named Jay Morley. No family, nothing. Just the guy.
Enemies?
No. Nobody knew him around here. He just started in the business a month ago. Came from Toledo, I think.
Let's try the Earl of Gardner.
Schultz? Well, that's different.
Meaning what?
Enemies. Enemies all over the place. Nobody likes him, but nobody.
His name's Schultz?
Yeah, Stanley Schultz. I gave him the title Earl of Gardner. Good, huh? He kind of fit. He used to be an actor. Then a streetcar conductor. He needed the dough, so I picked him up. He draws a crowd.
Two guys wrestle, one of them turns up dead. It's too simple. There's more somewhere.
Yeah, there's always more. Listen, maybe a workout will help you, huh? I'll get you some trucks.
Some other time.
Okay. Take a look around, Regan. The joint is yours. I got work to do. Big match coming up tonight.
The little man walked off, mopping his brow. I decided to take his advice, look around. I watched a barrel-chested guy in black tights grapple with a heavy bearded character in a turban, both practicing groans. Near the wall, a big guy, big even in that place, stood raising and lowering a 200-pound barbell. I walked over. His big arms flexed as the black weights went up and down, but his breathing was easy. There was something about the guy you couldn't help notice. His hair. It hung down his back almost to his trunks in two long braids. I had turned my back to him. That was a mistake.
Hey, Regan, look out!
I stepped aside in time. In time to miss the 200 pounds of solid iron that fell from the big guy's uplifted hands. Fell and crashed 6 inches from my head.
Regan. Regan, you okay?
Sure, Turner. I feel great.
King, come here.
You want me, Turner?
Yeah, King, I want you. What's the idea letting that barbell slip like that? You could have killed Regan.
Regan.
Go on. Tell him you're sorry.
Sorry.
Save the tears.
What'd you say?
He didn't understand you, Regan.
Yeah, but I understood him, and I don't like the joke.
Now, he's okay, Regan.
Okay.
Sure, you're okay. You just happened to drop 200 pounds of cast iron when my back was turned. Okay.
Regan, it's no use in getting sore about it. King didn't mean it. Now, go on, King. Get back to work.
Work?
Yeah. That's... He's just a big, dumb stoop, Regan. He didn't mean nothing.
What's his name?
Harry Walsh. He calls himself King Cobra. He fixes up those braids when he goes into the ring. They look like snakes. He draws a crowd.
Yeah, so would my funeral, Turner. Only the gate receipts wouldn't do me any good.
Why, no, it's no use being sore, Regan. The king's a little over-anxious, that's all. Got a big match tonight.
Who with?
The Earl of Garden.
What?
Well, say that. That's right, you were asking about the Earl. Yeah, him and the king are set for the feature go tonight. Should be the match of the year.
How'd you get that?
Oh, didn't I tell you? They hate each other like poison. House is sold out. Should be nothing short of murder.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Turner. Maybe that's an idea. I headed out the door. It made sense. I couldn't lose anything having a talk with the cops. King Cobra weighed in at better than 300 pounds. And it made more sense. I wasn't going to continue the argument with him. It was late afternoon, half-empty streets. I was heading toward my car when I picked up the footsteps. High heels, walking fast to keep up with me. I slowed, they slowed. I picked up the pace, so did the high heels. Somebody had to end it.
Oh,
you wanted something?
Oh, you're a detective, Mr. Regan, and I need your help.
Name?
Jean Turner, Mike Turner's wife. I saw you talking to Mike back there in the gym.
So you followed me?
Oh, please. Couldn't we talk somewhere?
Sure thing, lady. Come on. It was a combination bar and cafe. Bafo's, the sign said. I opened the door, place empty, and a girl walked on in. She was maybe 5'4", blonde, young, good-looking. Seemed straight on nylons on nice legs. She turned, looked deep into my eyes... Turned away, scared.
I've changed my mind. It really wasn't important.
Let me decide. But... Back booth.
Oh, all right.
Hiya, patrons. Can I help you?
No, thanks. We'll take the back one.
The back booth? You won't like it.
Yeah?
No television. The only booth in the house where you can't see the television, patron.
We'll suffer.
You don't like television? You're nuts. Everybody likes television. It's here to stay.
Sure.
Okay, only you're going to miss time for beanies. Okay. Be a reactionary. It's your life.
It's on your mind, Mrs. Turner.
Jean, please, Mr. Regan.
Okay. Jean?
Well, it's about the wrestling match.
Well, that's a good start.
Well, I'm terribly worried. Something horrible is going to happen.
It already did. The atomic assassin's dead, you remember?
Oh, that match.
Oh, that's what your husband said. Makes sense, will you?
Mr. Regan, I'm talking about the match tonight. King Cobra is wrestling with the Earl of Gardiner.
King Cobra? Well, what's that got to do with the murder of the guy last night?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it has nothing to do with it, but... Oh, but Mr. Regan, if you don't do something, there's going to be another murder. I'm sure of it.
So you don't like television, huh? Maybe you'd like to hear what happened to me with television?
If you'll excuse me, Mr. Regan, I'll be right back.
What's wrong with her?
I didn't ask.
You should have. She got tears in her eyes. Oh, well, where was I? About television and me. Yeah, now, there's a story for you.
Make it short.
I used to be a wrestler. Bafo the Blockbuster is what they called me. And I was great. Until along comes television and they cancel me after my first match. You want to know why? I'm too pretty. Can you imagine that?
Rough.
Me? Oh, well, I'm philosophical. Look what happened to thousands of silent movie actors when they brought in sound. Who am I to stand up in the way of progress?
You know, that's a very good question.
Yeah, and besides even my name, Bafo the Blockbuster, it's out of date. Now they got Jet Sam, Roger the Rocket.
Four shots from somewhere out back. Bafo and I headed that way in a hurry. Back alley empty. No traffic, nothing. Back inside, a storeroom empty. Bafo and I looked at each other.
What goes on here?
What else have you got back here?
Nothing.
Well, what's behind the bar?
Storage space, washroom, telephone booth.
Where?
Phone booth's right over the... Oh, you don't think...
Look, first then think. Oh, wait
no,
here.
No, I hope not. No, that's not true. My place.
Shut up. Jean Turner. Four holes in her back. She was right, Bafo. There was going to be a murder. Hers. A wrestler who called himself the Atomic Assassin was dead after a match with another wrestler who called himself the Earl of Gardner. That's when the Earl hired my boss, the Lion, and me to find out who done it. I met a promoter named Mike Turner and another wrestler named King Cobra. Finally, I met Turner's wife, Jean. Only our acquaintance didn't last long. She wound up in a phone booth with a lot of slugs in her back. It made sense Lieutenant Cannon of Homicide would have some comments.
Hello, Regan. Have a chair.
Thanks.
Which one's yours?
The Earl of Gardner?
Him.
You don't like my client?
Made a pass at my telephone operator.
I saw her.
Sure. What's on your mind?
You got anything on the Earl? I mean, real?
Maybe.
That's no answer.
Gene Turner makes a lovely corpse, Regan.
What about the Atomic Assassin, Candid? Two murders fit. Somewhere.
Sure, maybe they do. Takes time, Regan. It's a shame a guy'd kill something as nice as that Turner dame. It's a shame.
Try once more. What about a wrestler named King Cobra?
Doesn't interest me.
What about the husband, Mike
Turner? Nope.
Okay, I'm sorry I asked.
Don't get sore, Regan. You know how these things are. It takes time.
Then you're going to let the Earl wrestle tonight?
Why not? Maybe he'll get himself killed. Save the taxpayers a lot of expense. Tell him for me, Regan. If King Cobra doesn't break his neck for him, maybe somebody else will.
I headed for my car outside. Candid was playing it close, all right. It gave me nothing. But I did have a wrestler who makes passes at a cop's telephone operator. My client, the Earl of Gardner, alias Schultz. About as popular as a case of measles. Chances were I'd find him at the arena checking in for the big match. I swung the car around in a hurry. I found him all right, stretched out on a table, getting a massage. He didn't seem happy to see me.
Oh, Mr. Regan, I presume.
Questions, pretty boy.
Something troubling you, Mr. Regan?
You.
Go on, Mr. Regan.
What makes you so popular?
Me? It's ridiculous. People hate me.
Why?
My job, Mr. Regan. I'm a professional villain. I'm paid to have people hate me.
You're taking your work home with you.
Other side, Oil.
Oh, okay. I'm listening, Mr. Regan.
What about you and King Cobra? He says he's going to kill you tonight.
Publicity.
Who's kidding who?
Max. Huh? Max, you better leave.
Okay, Oil.
Now listen, Regan, I like you. You're working for me. But King Cobra and I, well, that's business. Gate receipts.
Have it your way. I think different.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, Regan. Something maybe you ought to know about me.
You got the floor.
Oh, sure. Sure I'm a no-good heel. Out there in front of a crowd, everybody hates me. I make more money that way. It's my living.
Ever try anything else?
Plenty of things. I wanted to be an actor once. Like a lot of young punks, I came to Hollywood. I didn't get anywhere, Regan. I took jobs where I could find them. I ended up as a streetcar conductor.
A streetcar named Schultz.
Sure, why not? My father was in show business. I know what it's like to miss meals. It isn't fun.
Go on.
Well, Mike Turner spotted me on that streetcar. I got a good build, and he liked me. Mike's a square shooter, Regan. He gave me the title and the promotion. I eat now. Every meal.
See what you mean.
Huh? That's it. End of story. I eat now.
Okay, Schultz. It's your business. I got business, too. To clear a murder rap and keep you out of hot water.
Thanks, Regan.
You know why anybody would kill the atomic assassin?
No, honestly, I don't. I never met him before the match last night. We shared the same dressing room. He drank some water after the match. He was poisoned.
What about Jean Turner?
Well, I've seen her around here. Sweet girl. I like her, Regan. Used to walk her home nights Mike was busy.
That's all you can give me?
That's all.
Okay, Earl. You wrestle and I'll watch. But be careful. I got a hunch King Cobra and you haven't been reading the same publicity notices. It was beginning to make sense now. The Earl of Gardner, professional villain, wrestles unknown name of atomic assassin. The assassin dies, the Earl lives. No motives. Only if you switched it around, gave the Earl the poison, you got motives all right. Motives by the dozens. Things could add now. I put in a phone call to my boss, Anthony J. Lyon.
Lyon Detective Bureau, Anthony J.
Okay, it's me, Fatso. I got a job for you.
Jeffrey, what's the rush?
I need an answer, and I need it within the next hour. There's a wrestler around town named King Cobra.
I know, and you want me to find out if he has a record. I'm ahead of you this time, Jeffrey.
Yeah, check the police on that already. Lyon, I want to know if King Cobra's married.
What?
Find out where he lives. Run out there. Meet the wife, if he has one.
Jeffrey, are you out of your mind?
It's important. Our client wrestles King Cobra tonight.
Yes, so I read in the... Oh, so that's your scheme, is it? Send me out on some wild goose chase while you enjoy the wrestling matches. Probably put it on the expense account, too.
You guessed it, Fatso.
Jeffrey, I'm sick and tired of having you pad your expense account. Not only do you include yourself, but tonight you'll probably take some lame brain numbskull along.
Lyon, you're absolutely psychic.
Psychic, psychic. This has got to stop. What bum are you dragging along this time?
You, Fatso.
You see, I... What?
Well, I figured you'd like to see the matches, and that way we could both put it on the expense account.
Jeffrey, what a brilliant idea. Positively brilliant.
Yeah, and bring that information I need. King Cobra's wife. It's business, Fatso.
Jeffrey, what on earth are you insinuating?
Never mind. Get busy. You may be the difference between just another wrestling match and murder. Things were moving now. It was after 8 o'clock by the time I finished dinner. At the box office, somebody handed me 2 ringside seats Mike Turner had left for me. Free. When I got in, the place was mobbed. One of the prelims had just wound up. By 9 o'clock, there wasn't an empty seat in the house. Power of the press, power of the imagination. Everybody there. Everybody expecting to see something special. You could tell it from the looks on their faces, the atmosphere, the tense excitement. Everybody waiting for the big match, the Earl of Gardner versus King Cobra. Pretty soon, the Lyon showed up, led in by music and a big cigar.
Jeffrey, I thought I'd never find you in this mob.
Sit down, Fatso. It won't be long.
Ringside seats, eh? How much did this cost the company?
Passes from Mike Turner.
Passes? Oh, delightful. Think of the money we save.
Never mind that. What about King Cobra? Married?
Oh, you should see her, Jeffrey. Cool green eyes, red hair, dimples, everything. Legs, lovely. Lovely.
That settles it.
Jeffrey, what on earth are you driving at?
Handsome, noble gladiator! That magnificent specimen of humanity! That glorious champion from Dover, England! At 14 stone 10! Wearing white trunks with his family! Crest! His Highness, the Earl of Gardner! From the wild! Of the timberland of the northwest, from the rugged earth of our great nation, comes that giant, that modern-day Paul Bunyan, that towering figure of humanity, that 311 pounds wearing black trunks, King Cobra!
Jeffrey, you still didn't tell me why you wanted to know about King Cobra's wife.
Later, Fatso. We came to see a match, remember?
Hi, Regan. Mind if I join you?
Oh, Lyon. Mike Turner. Mike, my boss, Anthony J. Lyon.
Well, howdy do, Mr. Turner.
Howdy. Going to be a great fight, Regan. Great fight.
But your wife couldn't make it.
What? Oh. Yeah, I see what you mean. Think it's funny that I'm here, huh? My wife murdered?
Maybe.
Why lie about it, Regan? Jean and I didn't get along. We were split up. She didn't love me. Let's watch the match.
It was three falls, 1 hour time limit. The referee gave them their instructions. Brief, simple. Don't kill each other. But from the look on the face of King Cobra, he didn't hear good. They started. The Earl, the King. I didn't have to be an expert to throw out the publicity theory. The aloof look was gone from the Earl. The crowd forgotten. Both of them tumbling, spinning, twisting, fighting. Ten minutes. First fall to the King. Twenty minutes. Second fall to the Earl. Both men growing weak, tired. Cut, angry, fighting.
Jeffrey, I don't like it. Something's wrong.
Real wrong.
Something should be done.
Turner.
Yeah. What do you want?
Are you going to stop it?
What? Stop the match? You're crazy.
They mean business.
Well, sure they do. They're good men. Great show they're putting on.
That's no show, Turner.
No show? You kidding? They're the greatest fakers in the world.
They weren't faking. The crowd sensed it. The referee sensed it. Even the cops landing in the aisles moved down a little closer to the ring. Everybody knowing what was happening. Nobody making a move. It was what the crowd came to see. Something special. 50 minutes gone, 10 to go. Two beaten men, evenly matched. The Earl, lean, fast, clever. King Cobra, massive, powerful, slow. Nobody winning, both of them losing. The referee, long since just another guy, watching. The Lion on the edge of the seat. The crowd on its feet, screaming. Then it happened, 5 minutes ago. Mike Turner got up, he hurried to the referee. They pried them apart. Turner talked to King Cobra, and then to the Earl. 5 minutes left. Match even, one fall each. And it looked like it was over. The crowd didn't like it. Neither did the wrestlers. And then Mike Turner signaled them to go back into the ring. And that's when I decided to move.
Jeffrey, come back here! Jeffrey!
I got to the ring in a hurry. The police tried to stop me. The spectators tried to stop me. The referee tried to stop me, but I got there. I got there and grabbed King Cobra.
What you doing?
Give me that.
I'll kill you for this.
Give me what's in your hand, King.
I'll kill you for the police.
All right, men. All right, grab him.
Let go.
I'll give the evidence, Regan.
Sure. Here, Candid.
Okay, Regan, clear out of here before you get yourself killed. The police will handle him.
20 policemen, Lieutenant Candid, King Cobra, and Jeff Regan left the ring. Alive. The cops led the interference, and we made our way to the dressing room.
All right, King, let's have it.
I do nothing. Nothing.
Yet. Only a couple of minutes and...
Nothing.
Hey, what's the idea of stopping the match, Lieutenant? I want Regan arrested. He's got no right to stop...
To stop a murder, Turner?
Quiet, both of you. Regan was out of bounds, Turner. We can take care of that later. But I want an explanation as to where your wrestler got a small sack of prussic acid.
Prussic?
Poison, Turner. Chances are the same kind that killed the atomic assassin. King Cobra palmed it.
I don't know nothing about it, see? If Cobra tried to pull a stunt like that,
Cobra
didn't
pull anything, Turner. You gave him that poison sack when you went to his corner to talk to him. Yeah, that's why you interrupted the fight.
Gosh, that's nuts.
That's right. Mike gave me sack.
Okay, Turner. Talk.
Look, you got nothing on me. You can't prove anything.
You killed the atomic assassin, Turner, by mistake. He and Earl shared the same dressing room. You were after the Earl then, just like you were tonight.
You got nothing. Nothing, do you hear? Just a bunch of lies.
The Earl was a nice-looking guy, Turner. Women liked him. He used to be friendly with your wife, Jean. You drew some wrong conclusion about that.
That's a lie. She and him were...
Finish it, Turner. You killed Jean to keep her from telling what a jealous maniac you were. That would have been the real tip-off. You used the same stunt with King Cobra. Told him his wife was playing around with the Earl. Got him sore. Worked him up to a real anger. Almost got him to kill for you.
That's right. Mike Turner told me that. Wait. He says my wife...
King, shut up!
Never mind, Turner. The police never let you out of their sight for a minute after your wife was shot.
No.
We got all we need on you. Regan just brought things to a boil.
Oh, thanks, Candid. Thanks a lot. That's how it was. Mike Turner, jealous husband, knocked off two people trying to satisfy a rage. The atomic assassin by mistake, his wife on purpose. The Earl of Gardner was close to being number three. King Cobra got off with a light charge, but Turner was scheduled for the works. When I got to the office the next morning, my boss, Anthony J. Lyon, was reading the morning paper. He looked puzzled.
Hey, Jeffrey.
Brushing up on the race results, fatso?
No, Jeffrey. I was reading about the Turner case. You know, I simply can't understand it. Mike Turner seemed like such a nice fellow, giving us those passes to the match and all.
To throw off suspicion, fatso. And to have us right next to him in case anything went wrong.
Well, I must confess it was clever of you, Jeffrey, to check up on King Cobra's wife. Imagine Turner using the jealous husband routine to inflame King Cobra to attempt murder.
Jealous husband's lying. You never know. Now, take you, for instance.
Hmm?
You went out to see King Cobra's wife.
Yeah, but Jeffrey, that was business. You sent me.
Yeah, but suppose King Cobra didn't look at it that way. Suppose he found out you were with his wife. After the things Mike Turner's been telling him. Well...
Jeffrey, no, you don't think...
Just a thought, fatso.
Yeah, but Jeffrey, it was business, simply business. You sent me out there to see the woman.
Yes, and you said she was lovely. Cool green eyes, legs, things like that get around, Lion. Who knows? Maybe King Cobra's looking for you right now.
But Jeffrey, you've got to get me out of this. You've got to explain. It was...
Phone's ringing.
Yes, so it is.
But don't you think you ought to answer it, fatso? Never can tell. It might be business.
Yes, of course. Lyon Detective Bureau, Anthony J. What? Who? No, he's not in. No, this is his assistant, Mr. Smith. Anthony J. Smith. That is John Smith. No, he's gone for the day. He may be gone all week. Yes, I'll tell him when he comes in.
Who was it, fatso?
Wrong number, Jeffrey.
Oh, really? Sounded like a woman's voice to me, fatso. Anybody I know?
Jeffrey, it was Mrs. King Cobra. She called to invite me out to dinner.
Like I said, fatso, never can tell.
Jeff Regan, Investigator, is written by William Frug and William Fifield, produced and directed by Sterling Tracy, and stars Frank Graham as Regan with Frank Nelson as Anthony J. Lyon. Original music is by Dick Arant. Jeff Regan, Investigator, is heard each week at this same time. Bob Stevenson speaking and inviting you to be with us again for more suspense and mystery and adventure with Jeff Regan, Investigator. This has been Case Closed. I hope you enjoyed our stories this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. In between now and then, you can find more from Unit 99, Jeff Regan, past episodes of this show and all the other podcasts at RelicRadio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is there and our donate button. If you like this show, would like to help keep it coming every week, give that button a click or visit donate.RelicRadio.com. Your support makes it all possible. My thanks as always to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with Tales of the Texas Rangers and Dragnet on another episode of Case Closed.